6 seconds to go. Comes in to Tucker. Ewing sets a screen. The shot is off. Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Strick and Roll. This is episode 13, and I'm your host, Shwini Poo. I am joined by a friend of the pod, but hasn't been on the pod in a long time. His name is Simon Sharon Gordon. That's at Simon Seago on Twitter. He works for the NBA, providing social media content for them. Simon, how are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, I'm not going on like Twitter that much these days outside of work, and like I'm starting to just like every time I go on like want to go on even less. Like today I go on to I was honestly only on there today like to communicate with you and set up like when we were going to record, and but I see like trending, it's like, please respect Mia Khalifa's rebrand.
Yeah, I saw that and I just decided like I was not going to figure out. I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna bother trying to figure out what this is actually about.
There's like so many layers to like, what am I even looking at? Like, I forgot she existed. I don't know what her rebrand is. I don't know who knows enough to even disrespect it. This is why I try to like stay off of Twitter these days.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. It's a website. But before we get started, I do have to make an announcement. The Strickland has a Patreon. You can subscribe to it. There's a number of tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland every Friday that I do with Prez. It also gets you access to our mailbag that we do every other week with Jeremy and Drew. Furthermore, you get access to the Strickland Discord, where you can talk about the Knicks and many other things all the time with other Patreons. There's a $9 here that gets you access to this pod right here, Strick and Roll, my solo pod where I yell and rant and rave about the Knicks even more. More importantly, you get access to weekly articles by the wonderful Jack Huntley and Matthew Miranda, two of the best writers in the business. There's further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and a $100 tier. Those come with a variety of additional benefits like live watch parties, listening on pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast with yours truly. But whether you choose to subscribe or not, none of this would be possible without you. So, without further ado, let's get started. Look, the playoffs are ongoing. Simon, you are a Warriors fan. I guess we can start with this series, which has become less about basketball and more just about who hurt who and who injured who and all kinds of variety of then the code, who broke the code.
Saying like broke the code in day-to-day life to people who don't know anything about basketball, and I think they'll find it hilarious.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. This series is really weird. I thought Golden State would actually win this in five, which it looks like they probably will. I thought the first two games were awesome, by the way. Like, that's what actually sucks about the series. The first two games were awesome, and none of the discourse after either of those games was about the actual game itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I think that obviously what Dylan Brooks did was a degree worse than what Draymond did, maybe several degrees. But at the end of the day, like, even then, I was like, I thought it was a little heavy-handed where like Steve Kerr comes out and like the initial broke the code usage, right? Like, I'm like, yeah, it was a reckless play, but like shit happens. And at the end of the day, Dylan Brooks didn't literally break Gary Payton's arm. He like hit a defenseless player in midair when he didn't really have a play on the ball. He hit him pretty hard. And that player then decided, understandably, to brace his fall with his arm, but like also stupidly. And it sucks what happened. But like, I just was never like, this whole back and forth about like who's dirty, like I don't think anybody in the NBA right now, even Grayson Allen, is like actually out to injure anyone. The closest I can think of in terms of like intent to injure from this season was when Jokic like blindsided Morris in the back and knocked him out for months, which people seem to like just forget about. But I don't know. I'm just not really here for any of that. So then when that discourse starts, and then when Ja like played further into it after game three with what I thought was the only actual breaking of code, which is like accusing an innocent player of trying to injure you when you know yourself that it's not true, like doing that in bad faith is kind of disgusting to me, and we'll get into that. But like, to your point, now I'm talking about it, but I also hated all that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, like, I understood why it happened, and I mean, I'll say this, I actually do think Dylan Brooks is pretty much a dirty player. He walks that line all the time. This is probably the most high profile incident he's been involved in, so obviously it's understandable that it got a lot of attention. But I mean, if you watch enough of the Grizzlies, that guy lives on that line, and it's fine to live on that line. I just think he crosses it way too often. I know that people will say, oh, well, Draymond has crossed the line, and Draymond has crossed the line, and he's been punished for it. And, you know, it is what it is, but, like, I would suggest that the things that Draymond has done pale in comparison to that play on Gary Payton. Second, I thought that was, you know, look, like, they were talking about this on TNT before the game, maybe yesterday, I think. But like, that's kind of the one thing when you're an NBA player where if you're going up in transition, for somebody to come from behind, and the thing that, about that play that made it ridiculous to me was Payton is a lefty. So he's going up with his left. Brooks is coming from the right, from behind him. And he makes what he would say is a play on the ball, but there's just no chance for him to get the ball there. And he just goes through Payton, like Gary Payton. And, you know, I understand it's the playoffs and guys are playing hard and you don't want to give up free baskets, but like, I thought that was ridiculous. I thought it was definitely dirty. I had no problem with players on the team insinuating as such, as was reported during the game. Not even insinuating, flat out saying it, I think. I did like... If you're Steve Kerr, I think... here's the other part of it, though, too. Should Steve Kerr have said that? Probably not. Do I think there is some mental mind games being played by saying something like that, and he believes that maybe that can give his team an edge, be it with officiating or whatever? Yeah, I do. I do think that's part of it. And, you know, whether that's right or wrong, that's always been part of the game. You know, like, you can go back and look at things Phil Jackson said in during playoff series about this whistle or that whistle or his team not getting a fair call. You know, you're a Warriors fan. You saw Draymond Green get ejected from a series for a game because LeBron did the same thing in a post-game press conference, right? So this is part of the game, and it's maybe an unsavory part of it, but what I will say is that I didn't particularly think that he was off base. And I know like people were like, well, what about Zaza? What about Draymond? It's like, okay, well, if you accept that those guys have made dirty plays, then what's your issue with this? Like then you should accept this and be okay with like with him insinuating that yes, Dylan Brooks made a dirty play.
Yeah, yeah. And also I just think along those lines, I found it hilarious then when Taylor Jenkins like made the most half-hearted effort to do the same thing after the Poole jaw play, where it was like clearly there was pressure from his team for him to like ask the league to take a look at it, but he didn't really want to. He's like, yeah, I mean, I'll have to talk to the guys and see if they want, like, see if they're serious about this. But he's just been, like, towing the line like that with a lot of his commentary after games in the series. Like, he doesn't really have any legitimate gripes, but he feels like he has to defend his team to, like, a base level. Which I'm just
And I also think, like, to be quite honest, I think it's convenient for him to do that. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but and I don't know what Adam's status was for the first three games of the series. But watching that game yesterday, he kind of played Adams out of necessity yesterday to an extent. And I think it looked pretty obvious that not playing him at all was a mistake prior to that in the series. I thought yesterday, I thought he coached a terrible game. And I know people will be like, well, Ja was out. Okay, Ja was out. I mean, I thought why Dylan Brooks stayed in the game yesterday, brought back in, actually, in the fourth quarter, was absurd to me. He was terrible throughout the game. Yeah, that's one of your guys, but if you can bench Steven Adams, you can bench Dylan Brooks for a game. It'll be fine. I thought he coached a really bad game, and I just think he's not really coached very well in the playoffs. You know, like, you look at their half-court offense, so much of it is just give it to Ja and have him drive into the paint and hope that he can create something or create chaos and you can capitalize on the glass, you know, kick out, whatever it is. It's just not really, I've not been impressed with him as a coach. And I do think, like, look, like, you lose by 30 points in game three and your go-to is to start blaming Jordan Poole for, I don't know, like, even if you want to call that a dirty play, how on earth am I supposed to believe that Jordan Poole touching Ja Morant's calf was, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even know. I have no clue how you can determine that caused that injury. And, you know, and then yesterday, you know, to say, I want to take a look at, I'm curious about what the league will say. It's like, dude, you lost the game and it's fine. Like, no one's going to kill you for losing the game yesterday, but just own that. You don't even need to own it. You just need to, like, You just don't say that. That's it. Like, it's very simple.
I mean, Memphis, like, this series has been so weird, right? Because, like you said, the first two games were really good. I at the beginning of the series, I thought Warriors win in 5, 6, or 7. After game one, I'm like 4, 5, or 6 because that just felt like that was one of Memphis's wins. The way that it went, the way, like, some of the poor play from the Warriors, Draymond obviously getting ejected, the foul trouble that the Warriors were in, like, that was a Memphis game, and they completely stole it. And then after game two, obviously 4 was off the table, but I still thought 5 or 6. And after game three, like, that confirmed my belief. It was like, oh yeah, Warriors in 5 or 6. Then Ja's out, okay. But that game, even though the Warriors are now up 3-1 and 5 or 6 is again, like, clearly what seems like will happen, like, that was totally off that script. That was like Memphis should have won, and had they won, I would have no idea where this series was going. And I do think coaching, yeah, I don't think Taylor Jenkins coached a good game, but I also think Mike Brown,
I don't think Kirk,
but, like, he coached a terrible game, and again, it's not his fault, but it was just that situation made it so the Warriors were not in a position to handle the adjustments that Memphis made, which was playing Adams, which was, when they don't have Ja on the floor, they just have more defensive toughness and length and size all over the floor. They can get in passing lanes more. They were handling, like, navigating all the Warriors' movement more, to the point where the Warriors kind of stopped cutting because it just seemed to be leading to turnovers. And, like, there was just no adjustment ever from the Warriors. And that's not so much to say that, like, Steve Kerr is the one who's calling all the shots when he is coaching. Like, I'm sure their whole staff plays a huge role in identifying things and making adjustments. But I think it's more just to say that, like, his presence alone is able to, like, he's the one calling plays, like, from the sideline, like, let's run this. Like, you didn't see a lot of that from Mike Brown. He's the one that, like, gets guys to refocus. To me, the Warriors came out, like, shaky, probably because of the changes that, like, not having Ja in the lineup create. And by the way, Memphis is a better team this season without Ja Morant, like, significantly. That doesn't mean they are long term, but, like, they have had more success, and you can't argue that.
Yeah, and look, I think the Ja discourse has gotten so ridiculous because he was anointed as a star, which I understand. Like, aesthetically, when you just watch them play with Ja and without Ja, it is very hard for your brain to process, like, oh yeah, they're better without him. But we have what they went 20-5, I believe, in the regular season without him. Way better than what their record is with him.
It was like their point differential was like +2 with him and like +13 without him.
Yeah, their defense becomes like, I mean, we saw it yesterday. Like, I didn't, like, it was one of those things where, like, in my brain, I was like, because it was Warriors -10 was the spread. And in my brain, I was like, well, you know, this makes total sense to play Memphis here. But then you're like, but it's the playoffs and Ja's not going to be there. And, like, maybe it's not the right play. And it's like, you know, I mean, look, it's one game. So you can't say like, well, see, you should have known. But the thing is, like, you can see that they didn't have a guy to pick on every possession in that game. Like, that was a big problem for them. And I do think, like, Brown did not exactly do himself any favors with, I didn't love just not playing Kuminga after the first 5 minutes. That was weird. And I just, I don't know. I didn't like him pulling Otto Porter actually when he did in the fourth. Cause he was the one guy that was hitting shots at that point in time. I don't know what is going on with Clay. It feels like every time he's on the court right now, he's trying to prove that he is a top 75 all-time player. And it's like, buddy, you're not going to prove that in, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's not how you're going to prove it anyway.
He's gone back to what he was doing during the season, which was like trying to create off the dribble and take like off balance leaning shots that just like were never, the thing is, they were never part of his bag, like, pre injuries. And it doesn't make sense that he thinks they are now, but like, it's the frustrating part of that is that he seemed to get back into like playing within the offense during the Denver series. So I don't know why it's reverted. The way he's playing, I mean, we'll get into it more. I don't mean to cut you off, but like, I don't, he has to turn that around if they're going to have a chance, like, against Phoenix.
I think the best way to think about Clay is that he's never been the most cerebral player, but because he was such an elite shooter, some of his bad decision making was, it didn't matter. And obviously right now that margin is different because he's not the same player he was before the injuries, at least not yet. You know, maybe he bounces back in full and we'll see. But like right now he's just not. And fundamentally, you'd look at this team, I don't care what anybody says, Steph is still pretty clearly the best player on the floor to me for them. Just talking about offensively, like, Jordan Poole has got to be the second guy. Like, he's got to be the second option. And I know that's like a very tough thing to manage for Kerr and for all these guys because Clay has equity. Clay's been there since the beginning, right? Like, he's one of the Splash Brothers. It's not an easy thing to negotiate. But if they want to win a title this year, they're going to have a conversation. And it's going to involve being like, Clay, we love you, brother. But like, you know, like, this is, we can't have you doing this. Like, you can't.
Yeah. Someone needs to be like in his ear, like, look, it's not a matter of like, we want to play you less. It's literally just like, we have to, if you keep hijacking possessions, because that's been an issue in like almost every game of the series so far, where like the Warriors have, with the exception of game 4 yesterday, like, they can get what they want against Memphis's defense. Like, they, their movement, their back cutting, like, they, the stuff they're getting at the rim, like, all series, and then finally started just, like, letting develop consistently in game three, which is why they shot, what, 63% from the floor? Like, that stuff is available, but it's only available if you just accept that it will be available by the end of the possession. If you take the first, like, semi-decent look to not just purely bad look that you get, like, you are, those are turnovers. And Klay has been good for, like, four or five of those per game. And I think outside of, like, whatever he is not able to do that he used to be able to do, he's obviously not the same guy defensively. He might not even have, like, the same shot versatility. I don't know. His shot looks pretty damn good to me when he takes good shots. But, like, whatever it is, like, if he just cuts out those shots that he easily can, it's, like, totally up to him, then he becomes completely playable for as long as, you know, in crunch time, 35 minutes a game, whatever it is, even with the defensive drop-off from where he used to be. But, like, clearly at this point, he's not going to do that. Like, someone needs to really get in his ear and be like, this is not up to you. Like, you are not going to play crunch time until you stop doing this shit. Because not only do they have Poole, but they have Wiggins. And Wiggins is not the player that, like, a 100% Klay Thompson is, but he was essentially in that Klay Thompson role as, like, the guy guarding the other team's best perimeter player.
And he's also bigger. He's bigger than Klay is, too.
Yeah, he can shoot. And, yeah, like, he can do more off the dribble than Klay. And, like, he was an all-star this year. And that version of Wiggins vanished when Klay came back. And they just don't need, like, a diminished Klay leading to a diminished Wiggins as well. Like, that's just not the best version of this team.
He's got to play more like a cog, and I think that's, like, tough, but it's also just necessary. And I do wonder if, to some extent, he kind of, like, I mean, it's probably not even, it might not even be a conscious thing, but you see, like, Poole has been awesome in this playoffs. He didn't have a great game yesterday, but in the overall, he's been obviously awesome. And you see how it's like, he can kind of see him coming for your spot. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not like Poole is going to literally take Klay's spot, but in the hierarchy, you can, that's probably going to happen within the next year or 2 years, right? Like, it's going to happen. And that's a tough thing, because what you're basically asking Klay, this is a guy who was a star in this league, a multiple All-NBA player, I think, multiple time All-Star for sure, one of the great shooters in NBA history, a guy who has delivered for you on, you know, in crunch time, in big spots, big situations. Like, people are always going to remember Game 6 OKC Klay, right? Like, that will always be a thing. And you're asking him to be like, look, this is, we love you for what you were, but, like, we need you now to be something else. And that's a really hard transition for a guy who has played at that level to make. He has the game to do it. Like, ideally, actually, right? Like, in a lot of ways, he's ideally suited to make that transition, kind of like how Ray Allen did. Obviously, Ray Allen, he had a lot more on-the-ball juice as a creator than Klay did at his best. But, you know, as he aged out, he just became very much like a movement shooter off the ball, spot-up guy. And I think Klay can make that transition. He just has to buy in. I do want to go back to Memphis, though, because I do think this Ja Morant thing is interesting. And I do wonder, like, It does feel to me, I don't think they can win this series without him. Like, they just, as great as the defense is, like, they just have no shot creation. Especially, for, like, there's just, it's just, like, Jaren Jackson Jr. doing weird floaters and stuff.
Yeah. And in crunch time, you really see, like, the difference. Like, yesterday you saw, like, the difference in crunch time is going to be, that's too much to win three straight games without Ja.
Yeah, it's like you can't get Golden State into that many straight rock fights. You know what I mean? Like, you're not gonna do it. They're gonna bust out and score at some point. But, like, with Ja, like, I just wonder, like, Ja is an interesting player. He's obviously very dynamic offensively. I feel like his passing is not that great, surprisingly. I don't know. It doesn't feel very intuitive. It feels always very reactionary, his passing, which isn't,
yeah.
I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is a thing. And I just like, me watching this series, like everybody has gone on and on about, oh, how young this team is and they have all this depth and they have all these guys and they're going to be here forever. And it's like, the youth is great and it isn't a non-factor, but at some point, like you're not going to pay all these guys, right? Like all these guys are not going to be here. Kyle Anderson's a free agent this offseason. I highly doubt he's back because they drafted Zaire Williams for a reason, right? Like Tyus Jones probably will be back. They have a lot of cap space. They can keep him, but he's a backup point guard. It's not like that's a main thing, but you look at some of these other pieces like Bane, Clark, you know, Bane is obviously just in his second year, but Clark, I think, is finishing his third season. Jaren Jackson Jr.'s extension kicks in. Ja's up for an extension this offseason. Like the bill is going to come due within the next year. And I think people need to pump the brakes on, like, they are going to have this 10-year window of competitiveness.
You're saying that Iguodala didn't leave a dynasty?
No, I don't think he left a dynasty. We've seen this with the Celtics, right? The Celtics, like 4 years ago, we all thought this team is going to be amazing forever. And they actually look like they have built a contender now again. But in between, it was not, you know, it didn't go like that. And things never are that smooth. Very, very rarely are they that smooth. Like even with the Warriors, right? As great as this run has been, they didn't make the playoffs for two straight years. And yeah, a lot of that's because of injuries and stuff, but I'm saying those are things that happen. Injuries are part of it. Like they happen. So you can't take for granted what you have now. And I think with them, like watching this series, especially without Ja, this really becomes clear. I do think they could, I think their wings are pretty meh. Like I'm not that impressed with them. I know Bane is good, but I also don't view him as a wing. I feel like he's just like a super jacked combo guard, which is fine.
Yeah, he's a guard. He's a two.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like their wings other than that. It's like Dylan Brooks, who, quite frankly, I think this series might have been a sweep if he had played all four games. You know, Zaire Williams is a really promising piece, and I've been really impressed by what I've seen from him in these playoffs, but he's like not a sure... I mean, he's not even a shot creator or anything like that yet, but you just see like such a need for shot creation on this roster, especially from the wings. And I just in general, like they could use more quality on the wing. And I just wonder if like they have so many pieces, right? And like I said, they're not going to pay all these guys. Is this a team that this offseason, you know, do you start cashing in some of these chips to consolidate and build out and add a wing? Like, I don't know who it would even be. A player that I've, the team, I would actually be really curious about this. I haven't like loved what I've seen from Chris Middleton this year, but I know he had a very long season. But then you like watch this Bucks Celtics series, and it does feel like the ancillary pieces around Giannis just lack talent to a certain degree. And I wonder if there's a trade to be made there between those two teams, because I do think like Memphis having the depth they have gives them the opportunity to maybe pay a little extra to consolidate. Whereas with Milwaukee, it's like you need to fill out this roster and get more talent, even if that means you're losing the best player in the deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Middleton is the specific move, but that type of move, like if you look at, I think the issue with Memphis's roster is they have guys like DeAnthony Melton, like John Conchar, like Xavier Tillman, who are just like not. They're too good to be like, they're not that much worse than Kyle Anderson and Dylan Brooks and like whoever the fuck, right? Like Brandon Clark, there's just there's not enough of like a drop off for that to be it's not really a roster strength when it comes to the playoffs, because it's like,
right.
Yeah, it's nice to have the option. Like, we can go to Xavier Tillman instead of Brandon Clark, because if we need a little more defense or like a semblance of a floor spacer or something, like, that's a nice option, but there's still diminishing returns on that. So it's like, kind of pick like whoever you want to give up. You give up half of that, like, what, 5 through 11 group or whatever it is. And then you like juice your starting five significantly. And that's the move they have to make, because Jaw is amazing. And it would be silly to say like he can't get better, but there's still a ceiling on him in the sense that he's never going to be like a prime Steph Curry, in terms of like him alone gives you a championship level offense. Like, he's never going to be that type of player. He could improve defensively. That's probably where he has more room to grow, because he has the tools to be so much better than he is. But he's still never going to be, like, he's skinny, and he expends a ton of energy offensively. So I can't see him, like, he's not even going to, he doesn't even have, like, Devin Booker's defensive ceiling, where like, Booker has gotten to. I don't think Ja can even be that good.
No, Booker's, like, a legit good defender now.
Yeah, so, like, there's just a clear like ceiling on Ja as this pure number one engine of a title team. And while guys like Bane and Jaren are awesome complementary players, they also just, like, you talked about some of Bane's limitations. Like, Jaren, I think Jaren has the pure talent to just be like a perennial all-star, but it's 4 years in now, and I just don't think it's like fully there mentally. I think he's one of these guys that it's just not there. So like if Bane and Jaren are your 3 and 4 and Jaw's like a 1A with another with a 1B or a 1B with a 1A, that could be a title core. If those three are your core, I don't see it.
Yeah. I don't think there's enough top end talent. I mean, I thought going back a little bit with them, the Minnesota series, I mean, I thought they should have lost that series. Not in the sense of like they deserve to lose it, but Minnesota
just beat themselves more than Memphis. Like, yes, they came back and you can give them credit for playing well when it mattered or whatever, but like it was very self-inflicted. Like, Minnesota changed the way they played without Memphis forcing them to change the way they played down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think like when I'm looking at teams around the league, and just like, I mean, specifically in the West for this matter, like, look, I have all kinds of questions about Karl Anthony Towns. I'm still not sold on him as being a guy that can anchor your team well enough, you know, to be a true contender or whatever. But like, as a pure talent, I mean, and just honestly as a player right now, I think he's more impactful, especially when you get into a playoff setting, than Jaren Jackson Jr. is. And I think that Anthony Edwards, in time, he's going to be a more impactful player than anybody on both these teams. I say this with the caveat that, like, even with that, I'm not sure Minnesota has they're not going to be a dynasty. Like, they're not some clear path to contenders. But like, I don't think the talent, like, as good as Memphis's talent is, your top end guys matter more than anything. And the depth they have matters a lot in the regular season. And it can matter a lot in a first round series against a young, kind of inexperienced team to a large degree in Minnesota. But when you're playing a team like Golden State, those margins and not having guys that you can just like Steve Kerr can basically up the performance level of his team by just dialing up minutes for Steph Curry, right? Like, right. And Jordan Poole and the past version of Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. Like, that's all he has to do. Doesn't need to be some widespread adjustment. It's just like, well, I'll just play those guys more minutes. I like, other than Ja, and even with Ja right now at this point in time, right today, I don't know how much that drastically improves your baseline given like some of the defensive issues he has. But aside from Ja, like, is there a guy you would look at on Memphis and just be like, well, if we just play him more, that's it. Like, you know, it just, they don't have that type of talent. And
I mean, Jaren's the only guy that's good enough, but the reason they don't play him more is because he can't stay on the floor. Like,
right, exactly. He just constantly fouls. And so I just do, yeah, like they're a team that's so prime for a consolidation move. And I think it's interesting because, like, they're much better, in my opinion. Like, the guys they have, the talent they have, the depth they have is much better than a team like Atlanta was last year. You know, Atlanta made that run to the Eastern Conference Finals. They got very lucky in that Philadelphia series because Ben Simmons just decided to be terrible. And they won, like, every game they won was a close game, and every one they lost was a blowout. And I think they came back from 20, like, twice in that series or something. It was something crazy. And also Doc Rivers. But, like, the point is, Atlanta is a team that last year, after the season was over, everybody was like, oh my God, they have so much depth. They, whenever a star comes around, they can consolidate. They're just going to run this back, and all these guys are going to get better. And that's just not how it works, because they tried running it back, and what happened? Cam didn't like his role. He wanted out because he knows that at some point soon he's going to have to play for a contract. So he's gone. Okay. DeAndre Hunter's hurt up and down all year, doesn't really progress. Kevin Huerter is Kevin Huerter. He's fine. You know, like, Okongwu is a backup center right now behind Capella. Capella looked like a shell of himself for half the season. It's just like, all of a sudden, this amazing depth and all of these pieces that you have to consolidate, they look different. And now it's not so easy to consolidate. And now your pieces aren't as appealing. And maybe it's not going to be easy to consolidate for a star. And I just think, like, they're a good team to look at in terms of, And I've tried to, like, one thing I'm trying to be more conscious of is, and I, like, actually, annoyingly, the Celtics team is an example of this, is, like, when you have these young guys that are super talented, your path to, like, creating a contending roster isn't, it very rarely is actually shut off. You might have to be creative, you might have to take some risks, you might have to make moves that, you know, aren't clear cut, but there's ways to do it, right? Boston has shown, like, look, they punted on Kemba on a first. They brought back Horford. Horford has a lot more in the tank than a lot of people thought. The Derek White trade was good. Smart has taken somewhat of a leap as a half court, just initiator playmaker. Tatum and Brown have both made leaps. All of a sudden, okay, now they're a contender. Like, wow, okay.
Yeah, and they drafted the Williams dudes, like,
right,
which
right,
is
right.
Just, such an added layer to what they already were building, but yeah.
Right. So, like, I don't think Atlanta's door is shut, but, like, they're an example of, like, how things can change so quickly and how these guys that you love right now and that the league loves right now, like, that is, it's the hardest time to do it, but it also is so often the best time to do it, the best time to cash in. And I think the Knicks are in a situation where they need to make some consolidation moves. That are probably, they're not as difficult to make because I don't think they're going to have a move for a star in them this offseason, and that's fine. I'm not sure that that matters. But, like, with Memphis, if you look at Atlanta, and it's a good parallel in the sense of, like, Trey and Ja and all that kind of stuff, like, you know, last year everybody was praising Trey after the playoffs, right? And this year, like, he got shit on because he got punked by Miami, by a flat-out better team. And a lot of that, in my opinion, is unfair because I think that, quite frankly, Miami was able to just key in on him because they didn't give a shit about anybody else on that team. They didn't care. Yeah. And, like, you know, what are we saying about Ja if Minnesota doesn't choke away a lot of those games? Because his first-round series was bad. Like, he did not shoot well from the floor.
And even his performance here against the Warriors, like, the numbers have been pretty amazing in his three games that he's played, but the Warriors are almost taking the inverse approach of what Miami took, where, like, Miami just keyed in on Trey, like you said, and the Warriors are more just like, we're going to key in on everyone else, and, like, we're going to keep Ja out of his, like, most preferable places on the floor, but at the end of the day, we're not going to really double. And we're just going to, like even in the game where he had 47, I feel like they had an offensive rating of, like, 105, 106. Like, that's been the game plan. So it's kind of the inverse of that, where, like, people will leave this series thinking much more highly of Ja than of Trey. But it's just the same, like the other side of the same coin, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just, it's like all the perception of these guys changes so much, so fast in this league.
Right.
And like, do I think, like, I will say this, like, I would still take Trae Young over Ja Morant.
Like, yeah, if no, you, this is the same. Yeah. This is a conversation I've been having with people, and people think I'm crazy for that. Like, I don't care what, like, Atlanta's record was this year compared to Memphis's. Like, Trae has shown me just as much. Like, this early in a player's career, I just want to see, like, what have you shown me so far? Trae has shown me just as much as Ja has. It was last year for Trae. But, like, he, like, there's really no argument you can make that, like, except for Memphis having a better record this regular season, which, again, we've talked about, like, a lot of that happened with Ja Morant off the floor. But I'm just going to look at what can you do. And, like, Trae Young is a dude who can, like, create more problems for a defense based on his shooting and his passing. Like, he's just significantly better in both those areas.
The NBA playoffs means next-level basketball. Get in on the first-round action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $150 in free bets instantly. You win no matter what. All DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also bet on NBA hoops with same-game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. Plus, each day of the first round, get a risk-free bet up to $10 if your same game parlay doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN, bet $5 on any NBA team to win their game during the first round of playoffs, and get $150 in free bets instantly. That's promo code TBPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. And I think he also has a skill set where they haven't successfully utilized it, but like he can leverage his skills off ball to provide value and utility in a way that Ja just cannot. Ja is not like going to be some dynamic off-screen shooter or catch and shoot guy. Like that's just never going to be in him. And Trae has to, like, some of that is on Trae himself. You know, like, he's got to be more active off ball. He, like, all those things are true. But like, as a passer, I don't think it's close. I think Trae is in a totally different, you know, category of playmaker passer than Ja is. As a scorer, you know, I have no idea what the efficiency numbers are. I would venture to guess Trae was more efficient. For me personally, I would rather have the pull-up shooter guard than the guy who just has to attack the paint over and over and over again for a variety of reasons. And they're both terrible defenders. So like, you know what I mean? Like it's not like
that's nearly as big a gap defensively as people would like to think.
I don't think there's a gap at all. I really don't. Like I know that Trae is more capable, or no, sorry, not Trae. Ja is more capable of like the occasional highlight defensive play. But like you look at how teams attack him, it's the same shit. You know, like it's the same thing, and it's easier to get away with it to cover up for those guys in the playoffs because quite frankly the refs allow more physicality. So you can grab and pull and do these things to a higher level than you can in the regular season to cover for them. But like, they both suck on defense. So that just doesn't really matter to me at all. It's all about the offense for those guys. And I mean, I have questions about Trae too, as far as like, if he's this bad on defense, how can you build a competitive team around him? Like how a real true contender, how hard is that going to be to do? But like, all I was going to say is like, it's just, but like he's such an incredible offensive talent, and even Ja is to an extent. Even though I really think he's, I think Ja is super overrated in terms of like, is he good? Yeah, he's obviously good. Is he the guy that so many people seem to think he is? Like, I mean, future MVP and all that stuff. Like, I just don't see that. I'm sorry. But like, the point is, like, these guys are such offensive talents that even if I am concerned about, like, the viability of building a contender around them, you can't punt on that yet. You know, you can't be like, well, we can't do it, so let's trade him and move on. Like, it's, you have to just try to figure it out for a much longer period of time. And, like, both these teams have had a level of success where it's not like there's no hope. You know what I mean? Like, Atlanta did make it to an Eastern Conference Finals. They did take the Bucks 6 games, right? Like, that's not like some bullshit achievement. Memphis is...
This seems to be like a move away from being closer to the level that at their best they look like they're on, right? Like, it has to be a significant move, but like this Chris Middleton type of trade that we're talking about, right? Like, or whatever, if it's fucking Donovan Mitchell going to Atlanta, whatever it is, like these teams could be getting another all-star player who fits away from like, okay, now the Hawks are a legitimate conference finals team. Now the Grizzlies are a legitimate 2 seed. Like, they're not necessarily far, but like they're far in the sense that it's not just going to happen organically. Or it might not.
All I was going to say is that like, sometimes you have to like push the envelope. Like, you've right. got it. Like the Warriors, I mean, one of the big moves they made, right, that kind of, like, took them to another level was trading for Iguodala. And at the time, like, in hindsight, it's funny because in hindsight, people are like, well, obviously, like, you do that trade. But, like, at the time, people were like, damn, I don't know, 2 firsts. I think Iguodala was, like, 30 or something at the time. And he was like, well, is this really, like, are the Warriors close enough? Is this really a guy that's going to help take them over the top? Like, it's not always clear. You know, like, I mean, I just said Boston's another one this year. Like, all the moves they made, I actually was like, it's weird because while I thought their window was kind of like, I thought Ainge had just completely screwed them over in terms of title windows. But, like, I actually kind of liked what they did in the offseason, and I was higher on them than most people, but I didn't see this. You know, I didn't think they would get to this level. And so, like, that's what I mean. It's like, sometimes you make a move that, Maybe even internally, you think the upside is just like, yeah, it's probably just going to make us like a second round exit or something like that, right? But sometimes it's worth it to do that just to like push your team forward, and maybe you get surprised because like I promise you, there's no chance in hell the Celtics thought Al Horford was going to be this good when they made that trade. There's no way. Like, there's just no way they thought that. And hey, credit to them though. Like, they're getting the benefits of that now. So I think at times, like for a team like Atlanta or Memphis or even the Knicks, like, you know, like Jalen Brunson's been a player that a lot of Knicks fans have talked about for a while. And like me personally, I do think that he's like, he helps you take the next step. Like, he definitely improves the Knicks in my opinion, but like, I understand concerns of, does he make them good enough that you feel comfortable kind of capping what Quickly's minutes would be and his role would be. And like, is there a world where Quickly has a higher ceiling and what he does? And like, I do think there is that role. Like, I'm really high on Quickly. I know that you've actually been pretty high on him. Like, I'm really high on Quickly. I think he could be a super, super, like pretty close to something like a Fred VanVleet level impact player. Like, but at the same time, I think if you can get Jalen Brunson, like you're not going to give up much to do it. You should do that. Like, you should definitely do that if you're the Knicks, in my opinion.
Yeah. Sometimes it's, I mean, we didn't even mention, like, I think the best example of what you're talking about is the Suns getting Chris Paul. Like,
right. Yep.
That was a move that was, even I was not like, sorry about the sirens. Like, even I was not 100% sold on that. I might not have even been 50% sold on that. You were a lot higher on that move, I remember.
Yeah,
but it
I
was
love
just
that trade.
Like, it was just like my thing at the time was like, I don't know how real this bubble Suns shit is. Like, they were at the end of the day, like, not a good team this past year, and now they're giving up, like, you know what, I think it was just 1 first, but they're giving up stuff to get a guy who by the time they're ready to contend is going to be too old. And like Chris, but like, obviously I was so wrong. But that's just the example of like, sometimes you just like are a move away when you don't even realize you're a move away. what I was going to say, though, is, like, I feel like there's two places we can go. I mean, we talked about, like, getting into some of the – and we can skip this if you want, but just, like, Memphis mania and how obnoxious some of that shit is. That's – but then the other place is, like, this idea of what works and, like, what leads to actual contention is something I really want to get into, and I feel like we can hop from here. So, like, I just think that
I think if you look at the East is more interesting to me, because I look at these Western Conference teams and, like, I'm not really surprised that any of them are in the final four. I guess I could say Memphis before the season I was a little bit down on them, but, like, within the first 20 games I was like, okay, I was totally wrong, they're really good. But, like, you know, it's them, it's, and I just don't, like, they don't excite me, because I kind of just, like, know what they are and I understand their roster constructions and what they do. I think there are valuable lessons to be learned from them, especially Golden State, which we can come back to. But if you look at the East, I think the East is so interesting because, like, you have Miami, who, yes, they have Jimmy Butler, and yes, he's playing like a superstar. I don't think they're, like, a star power team right now as they're currently constituted, but they have all of these different pieces, and then they have a great coach who kind of, like, picks the right guys and in right matchups and figures it out, right? And then you have Philly, who is, like, very much star power, right? It's like Embiid, they trade for Harden, Maxey is the other, like, another guy, Harris obviously is there, and then you have Boston, which is, like, really interesting how they've built this team out, where it's just, like, all these super strong switchable dudes on defense, like, across the board, right? Like, all of them are just, like, super strong switchable dudes. And then you have Milwaukee, which is, like, I mean, I gotta say this, like, I thought it was really funny last year when there was that entire, like, there was, like, this weird kind of conversation after the Bucks won, where it was like, oh, well, you know, this is a super team too. And it just, like, I don't know what you guys think Jrue Holiday is. Like, awesome defensive player, but just never, just a really bad second or third option as a scorer in the playoffs. You can get by with it if Giannis goes God mode, but, like, we're seeing that now in this series with Middleton out, especially, like, what his limitations are when he's asked to do more. And Middleton's obviously really, really nice, but, like, that's a super team, you know, it's a bit much. But, like, they have... I mean, Milwaukee, for all intents and purposes, they're all in. Like, they, that move they made for Jrue was, like, that was their big move. And, you know, you just look around, though, like, I'll just say this, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Looking around at each playoff series, the thing that stands out the most to me, and I don't know if I'm, like, overreacting to it this year or if it's palpably different, but, like, the requisite energy, effort and athleticism that's required to play at the pace these games are happening, and not just, I'm not even talking about, like, the totality of possessions, but the rotations you have to make on defense, you know cutting off a drive or covering out to the weak side shooter, making another rotation, like, it is crazy to me the level of, like, what you need as a team. And I just feel like athleticism in particular is, I mean, it's always been important, obviously, in the NBA, but, like, it feels like it's even taking on more heightened importance to me when I'm watching these playoff games. And it's kind of, like, a reason why I've completely turned around my idea of Kuminga. It happened. I mean, it also helps that Kuminga has, like, been a lot better than I anticipated off the bat. But, like, that dude, the way he's built, is the type of player that you are going to need multiples of to compete as we move forward into the future of the NBA.